This hour of gameplay is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app.
You're listening to Gameplay with Matthew Cause on TSN 1050. Embrace the odds.
I want winners.
Oh, yes, guy. Embracing the odds. Jim Taddy subbing for Matthew Cause on a Thursday. And plenty to cover. Of course, the Jays were rained out last night. That means a twin spin later in September with Baltimore. And quite frankly, maybe they need the break because they're off today as well and get home to play against Cleveland starting on the weekend. But certainly a downturn with those couple of losses in Baltimore. And the Orioles have crept back into things. And really, that's a heated playoff race in terms of the wild card. The Jays are in by two. Seattle's just a half game back. And then Tampa, Baltimore, and Minnesota in a real race. Tampa and Baltimore have the exact same records, and Minnesota's off by a game. So this is going to be a heated race down to the wire. We assume the Jays will get in, but, I'm not going to say that they won't. I think they're solid that way. I'm not going to overreact to a couple of losses, and maybe those they had to stretch themselves against Minnesota. So what they did was they created the race by stumbling around against Minnesota and Baltimore, but not much of a stumble against Minnesota, but you know what I mean. Closer than it should have been. The Jays are the better team. So they'll work all that out and get going. We've got tennis going on at the National Open in Toronto and Montreal, and, of course, golf, the FedEx Cup playoffs are underway. And I was fascinated to read that the federal judge has ruled that the PGA Tour ban on three players for the FedEx Cup is okay. So, that's a major step, right? You've heard me talk about this many times before. You can do whatever you want, but if somebody rules that it's legal, then you're away to the races. You're okay. If somebody says it's not legal or it's illegal, then you got a big problem. So that's a major step forward for the PGA Tour. And I know that Rory had something to say, and we'll hear about that in a couple of minutes. But as we're mumbling around incessantly about that, I should do a PGA FedEx St. Jude Championship leaderboard update. And Kim has the lead at 6-under. In fact, 6-under is a popular score. J.J. Spawn through 14 is at 6-under. Kim is through 16 is at 6-under. And Hatton is at 5-under. Let me just pedal down further on the page. 5-under also for J.T. Poston and Aaron Wise. Lucas Glover is at 5-under. These guys are still out in the course, as you might expect. Taylor Pendrith is 4-under through 17. So pretty good first round for him. And Mackenzie Hughes is 3-under through 16 to get the Canadians in there. And let me just pedal down further and find some more familiar names. Jordan Spieth, 1-under through 14. Adam Hadwin, even through 16. Nick Taylor, plus 1 through 11. So that's just a brief synopsis of what's going on the PGA Tour. And, of course, the baseball, the golf, the tennis, no hockey, pretty quiet in hockey, although there was a little tidbit released today that Robin Leonard will be done for the season. He's out. So that's a major problem for Vegas. And we're expecting, I don't know what to make of that Sandin situation. The quietness is kind of numbing to me, just because I would have expected, since all the arbitration is over, that might be over as well. I don't know what the holdup there is. And obviously, there's cap implications, but still. The Leonard situation is a hip, so he is to undergo hip surgery with a timeline for his recovery to be determined, likely to miss the entire 22-23 season. Our producer today is Chris Horvat. Chris, welcome in. How are you today, sir?
I am doing pretty well, Jim. How are you?
Let me check. Everything's okay here. and, of course, just getting over last night's first time I've done a hockey game in a while, so Canada against Latvia, 5-2. Canada over Latvia tonight, 5:30 will be on the air on TSN 1050 and across the TSN radio network with Sean Simpson, who's going to join us later on at 2 o'clock. We're going to get fed up with each other. He had his birthday celebration last night that we crashed as we did the Latvia game. 5-2. It was an interesting battle because you were hoping that Canada would not take the foot off the gas, and they did not. There was an interesting part in the third period where Canada started to drop penalties, and it was 4-on-4 play. Latvia looked like they might shaved their way back into this, but they didn't. And I was pretty happy with, first game. That was Latvia's second game, but first game for Canada. I liked what I saw there. How about yourself?
I also thought it was a pretty impressive performance. I do think there was some moments of uncertainty. I heard you say that in the third period they didn't take their foot off the gas, and I do think that's true, but I didn't think that that was the most dominant third period, especially given the opposition. But I think all eyes are obviously going to be on Connor Bedard moving forward. This guy looks like he is going to change the fortunes of a franchise in about, what, 7 or 8 months?
Yeah, and so that's the trick about this is now we have it in the summer. The game scores don't count from last December, the two games they played, but the goal total does. And so the last game we did, December, the day before it was called off, he had 4 goals in that game. And this was an intriguing story back then because he was sort of an extra forward and played himself right up the roster in 2 games. So now he's on the top line, and that's a pretty good top line, by the way, with McTavish and Waugh. And they're dominant out there. So it's fun to watch this guy. And when you see a guy like that, it's, you know, Hall of Famers just show up. Other people, you know, mature into roles, and they're really good players and have great careers. But the Hall of Famer, the special people, just show up. And from the first moment, you see what kind of talent they have, and they're really hard on themselves and work really hard to fine tune it and keep evolving. And that's what we have here. I think that describes Bedard exactly.
I've not heard it described that way, but I actually think that that is an incredible way to really put it. There's a lot of guys who just, for some reason or another, they show up on the first day or their first game or whatever it is, and they're ready to go. And, you know, to your point, it's not very common for players Bedard's age, 17, to make such an impact at these tournaments. Like, these tournaments very much are geared towards the 18 and 19-year-olds who are more mature. They have more experience. But, I mean, what Bedard's done, like you said, in December and yesterday, it's been nothing short of spectacular.
Chris, I have to say, with all due respect, and I was kind of waiting because I had this discussion with myself, and I do listen to myself, the odd time that I do talk to myself. To your point, the phrase "to your point," absolutely done with it. It's not part of my normal conversation. I know it's very formal. I'm not before a judge. I'm not trying to make a case. Instead of "to your point," I would always say, as you said, or "I agree with you." That's conversational. "To your point" is, I mean, it's almost like, yeah, you scooped me on the point, but then I have to acknowledge it. I mean, it's kind of regretful, isn't it?
I don't really look at it like that. I just think I'm trying to further your exemplary point.
Oh, wow. Have you taken law school? I mean, there might be, you might have to, switch courses here. I mean, this is very, very formal. I mean, House of Commons, I expect somebody to say, of course they wouldn't, unless it's their own party, to your point. But I might just say, as you said, or totally agree. In fact, have you thought about, like, you know, just general conversation. I mean, what do I know? Just general conversation stuff. And people driving around going, yeah, to your point, that's nonsense.
Fair enough. I'll try to keep it more casual with you, Tatman. I apologize for making you feel like the House of Commons.
No, no need. I mean, when you're working with Cos, go ahead. But I just like to use common words, and I just think that it flows better. I mean, if you look at song lyrics, some of the best song lyrics have the simplest of words.
Really,
and
yeah.
And sometimes a really good song, in a sentence, you could create 6 or 7 images just based on the words, what they're saying, and how they play off each other. I mean, very simple stuff. I mean, again, what do I know?
I would say that you know a ton. I think you're selling yourself a little bit short there, Taddy.
Well, to your point, yes. And that was the Tatman Circle. Yes. Oh, Ringo's in today. Fabulous. That's what we call the Tatman Circle, where I just bob and weave and eventually nail you with your own line. You see that? That is comedic art form, to say the very least. I think so, anyway.
I would agree, and I think that comes with years of experience at the helm, such as you have.
Years of listening to people, yes, for whatever that's worth. But anyway, I want to get back to that FedEx Cup thing. Rory McIlroy had a good clip on the federal judge ruling that the 3 guys that are banned because they're on the LIV Tour cannot play in the FedEx Cup. And it went to court, and the judge said, no guy. And here's Rory reacting to that.
From my vantage point, common sense prevailed, and I thought it was the right decision. And now that that has happened, I think it just lets us focus on the important stuff, which is the golf, and we can all move forward and not sort of have not have that sideshow going on for the next few weeks. I think where the resentment comes from the membership of this tour is the fact that they want to try to get their way back in here with no consequences. And you know, anyone that's read the PGA Tour handbook or abided by the rules and regulations, that would feel very unfair to them.
So that tells me that the PGA Tour handbook and the rules and regulations are legal, and we're done with these type of possibilities in mind, although I don't know how you could have predicted the LIV Tour. But that just means that they're written properly. If there was a flaw in the process or how they're worded, then it would have gone the other way. So that's good news if you support the PGA Tour. I think that's very good. I don't know how it affects other things. Other judiciary people will make that decision in terms of the antitrust and things like that. But you know, this tells me that sort of the ducks are in row for the PGA Tour, which is good news, I think, if you're a PGA Tour fan.
Especially with the Cam Smith news earlier this week. Like, I'm one of those people, I didn't think LIV was going to take off and get off the ground, but it just feels like every week we're getting a bigger and a bigger name and making the jump. And, you know, I appreciate what David Faraday said when he went over. He pretty much called out the people who were saying it's not for the money. He's like, of course it's for the money. That's the only reason I'm going. And I feel like it's just so disgenuine, ungenuine, not an honest approach from the players who are saying that I'm going over for golf reasons. No, you're not. You're going over because they're making your wallet fat.
Well, let's be honest. If somebody rolls up and says, I have a $100 million advance payment, an appearance fee, and then here's your salary, would there be a millisecond between yes guy and you know, the red carpet rolling out? I don't think so. I mean,
no,
come on. That's a huge amount of money.
It is. It's life-changing money, especially for, you know, people, regular folks like us. When we see a number like that, it's almost unfathomable to wrap our heads around. It's maybe slightly more understandable for pro athletes who make a lot more money. But even then, like, for the average pro athlete, $100 million is a crazy amount of money. So you're certainly right.
Let's be honest here. I mean, Chris, look, if somebody rolled in today, if somebody after the show was somehow miraculously impressed with what we're doing here and said, Tatman and Chris, we want you to do this show over here. We're going to pay you $4 million a year. You know what? I would sign that contract in a millisecond.
Yep.
And I would retire 6 weeks later.
That would be the plan. And it just goes to show you how much financial might the LIV circuit has. I mean, I kind of keep wondering, like, when is their money going to run out? But all indications are kind of pointing towards the money is not going to run out.
No. Well, that's, you know, and that's the one thing that the LIV Tour, as we understand it, has over the WHA, the American Basketball Association, and the American Football League way back when, was an unlimited supply of cash. All the other leagues had to sort of become, they had startup money, but they had to become viable on their own going forward, and literally they could not. Some stumbled worse than others, like the WHA wasn't around very long. What is it, maybe 6-7 years, and then and wisely the NHL absorbed four of the franchises. The American Football League was okay for a while, and the ABA okay for a while, but to go forward, it had to merge. I don't see that happening in this particular case. I don't know what the agenda is long term for the LIV Tour. You know, I don't know exactly how this works out, but I do know that they have a cash flow that nobody else has ever had as a startup. So, you know, new ground, and then it's many years later after the other instances that I applied to football, baseball, or sorry, basketball and hockey. And again, you know, the antitrust suit is interesting. I don't know where that goes or where it's at, but it is an interesting premise, because that's the American law. No monopolies, except for Major League Baseball. So we've sort of exhausted that, but Rory did speak also. He had a gap after the Open, talked about his time off.
Completely just got away from golf. I took 2 weeks off, didn't touch a club, didn't see the inside of a gym, probably didn't eat a vegetable. Sort of just 2 weeks of sort of vacation, and then I was back in Florida last week and getting back into it. And yeah, just sort of trying to get myself ready and prepared for the 3 weeks coming up. So you know, it was nice to take that little break and felt like I needed it, and feel refreshed and ready to go for the playoffs.
disappointed that he took a shot at vegetables. I mean, that's just not nice. And again, maybe you could do this. I would never try. 2 weeks without a vegetable. Do you do that?
No, never. Vegetables are a daily part of my life. I was one of the very rare kids. I actually liked eating my vegetables. I had cucumbers with salt for pretty much every meal growing up. What is the best vegetable in your mind? For me, it's cucumber.
Well, cucumber is one of the healthier foods, the vegetables that you could eat. I've looked this stuff up online. I've been battling my eating patterns over the last 5 to 10 years, and where I used to lead with the steak, no longer. I'll go to the produce section and bulk up on that. And actually, what was the main part of the meal before is now the side part. So I've reversed everything. Cucumbers, cherries, prepruit, there's all kinds of stuff there. I've spent a lot of time online, but definitely veggies and supplemental vegetables with supplemental, I don't want to say medication, but pills, capsules, things like that. Part of the Tap Man's regular routine. I mean, this is a temple, I have to say.
Could you go for some nice garlic broccoli every now and then? Because I know I can.
You know, as an Italian heritage, I hate to say I'm not much into garlic.
Really?
I hate to go against the code. Yeah, not much into it. But I could be talked into it. Again, not very much in the prepping department. So if somebody was to make it for me, I'm sure I would enjoy it. But I'm not motivated to cook much. So maybe that's why I headed down the veggie aisle, because it's just you just steam it or quick fry it or whatever, you know, or put it in water. It's easy to prepare. Yeah, easy to prepare. On the show today, we're going to have Scott Mitchell, our Blue Jay reporter, at the bottom of the hour. Sean Simpson, my partner on the World Junior hockey coverage, will be by at 2. Lindsay Young from the Minnesota Vikings will be by. She's part of the team broadcast, so she'll be by at 2:30. Yes Guy, No Guy, highly anticipated and fully sanctioned, by the way, at 3. Gil Alexander from... I keep messing up. Is it VEASAN?
VEASAN. Yeah, they have lots of great guests on the program.
Yeah, okay. Gil Alexander from VEASAN will be by at 3:30 talking about tennis. 3:50 sound of the day, and then, of course, Overdrive at 4. This is Gameplay, and I should have done this earlier. Gameplay on TSN 1050 is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams in the FanDuel Sportsbook app now. Gameplay on TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, streaming on the iHeartRadio app. Oh, yes, Guy. Game plan, TSN 1050. Jim Taddy subbing for Matthew Cause. And some topics. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk Jays with Scotty Mitchell, our Blue Jay reporter. But in the meantime, I have a question here for you, Chris. Do you think the Jays deserve to be considered as a true contender despite their season-long inconsistency? Now, these are your words. This is off your lineup. And I'm going to debate season-long inconsistency. I think it's a little different. Like, maybe it is inconsistent, but it's a little different now than it was earlier. Would you agree with that?
In what way do you think it's different?
I think they're a much better team now. They played through a lot of situations. I'm not going to kick them around for losing two against Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore, you have to look at it from the other side. Baltimore, well, since the I can't remember what the stat is. I think it's since the All-Star break, has been lights out.
Yeah, they're 22-8, I believe, since the All-Star break.
Well, so I mean, is that the result? Does that contribute to Blue Jays' inconsistency, or is it just the Orioles being lights out?
I do think it's fair. I mean, for the last couple of years, we have seen the Orioles be a bit of a doormat, and clearly that's not the case this year. They've got some really nice young players. Cedric Mullen is having a pretty good season following his breakout last year. Adley Rutschman looks like he is going to be the face of the catcher position in MLB for the next 10 years at least. But I guess when I say season-long inconsistency, I just mean that they have not had sustained periods of success all that often. Like, they did have the one stretch leading up to the All-Star break where they were playing pretty well. But this is a team that people were saying, you know, would be a World Series favorite. And when I look at that level of expectation, I don't think they've really performed to that level. And that's kind of what I mean when I say inconsistency.
Okay, I buy what you're saying there. I would look at it this way. I mean, what's the date today? Is it the
11th? The 11th.
So when we get to the 15th, really from the 15th for the next 6 weeks, that's where you're looking for things to happen. I sort of put in a little period between the All-Star break and the middle of August is, whatever happens there, as long as it's not really bad, I'm willing to accept. But the last 6 weeks, I need to see that A level, because then when you get into the playoffs, you have to be A+. So that's sort of where I like things to sort of time out that way, instead of going really well and then doing a slight fade from September, the middle of September on, and then you don't know what you have when the playoffs start.
And that's fair. I think it, to an extent, it does not necessarily matter what you do in this kind of dog days of summer portion. As long as you're in contention, in a playoff spot, and playing well in those final 6 weeks of the season, I do agree with you. I think that is probably the biggest factor that you want to consider when you're thinking of who is a contender and who is not a contender. But there's a little bit of, in my opinion, underlying problems with who the Jays are beating. They're 20 and 21 against the AL East, but that record is really skewed by a 10-3 record against the Red Sox. I personally don't think that the Jays have played all that well when they're facing their top competition. And down the stretch, they're going to have to play well if they want to maintain that playoff spot.
Okay, we'll do the home run cycle later. That's going to be our sound of the day, by the way. This Chandler Redmond, who plays in the Cardinals system, with, what, four homers in consecutive innings?
And on top of that, it was a solo, a two-run, a three-run, and a grand slam. It's apparently the only the second time it's happened in professional baseball.
Well, I mean, how many times would you be in that situation? I mean, that's just a complete outlier.
No, really.
That's
absurd.
Marvelous.
It's absurd.
Yeah, it is.
I would say it might be the most impressive accomplishment across all sports. Like, it's more impressive than a quadruple double in basketball. It's more impressive than a 5 or 6 goal game in hockey. Like, it is just absurd to complete a home run cycle in any level of baseball, really.
Okay, let's end this segment on this. It's called a what? Ravens defensive back Tony Jefferson II revealed an eye-opening revelation on his Twitter account last night. And here is his quote. "I can't even lie. I stopped wearing my glasses years ago. Might have been the dumbest thing I've done. I can see so much clearer and further with my glasses. It's wild." What? That's crazy.
I actually saw an image, too. To make it even worse, he was playing with a visor. So it's like he couldn't even see to begin with, and then he's clouding his vision even further with a visor. I thought that was a hilarious story. And, hey, maybe the Ravens' defense is going to take a step forward this year because of it.
Wow. Yeah, hey, I can see. Anyway, we'll step out. Scott Mitchell, our Blue Jay reporter, is next. Jay's off tonight. Rained out last night. Cleveland in town on the weekend. This is Gameplay, listening on TSN 1050, online tsn1050.ca, and streaming on the iHeartRadio app. Gameplay, TSN 1050, Jim Taddy subbing for Matthew Cause. Now we're going to talk about the Jays, who are at home to Cleveland on the weekend, a day off, and rained out last night. And quite frankly, August is not very inspiring. Let's get some more feedback on that. Scott Mitchell is here. Scotty, how are you today, sir?
Not too bad, Jim. How are you?
Pretty good. So when I look at August, I see a split against Tampa, a split against Minnesota, and two losses in Baltimore. They sort of have added fuel or put gas in a fire that's called the wild card race, haven't they?
Yeah, look, I think they played some really good baseball and got a little bit of a bump, obviously, when Charlie Montoyo was fired and John Schneider took over. And, you know, you saw that managerial bounce, you know, so to speak. And, yeah, I think, you know, they've, you know, come back down to earth a little bit. And when you kind of look at it, obviously, George Springer on the IL hasn't helped. You know, Tim Mesa going on the IL over the weekend didn't help. You know, some of the starting pitching performances have not helped, Yusei Kikuchi in particular. So, yeah, look, not a perfect ball club, not playing perfect baseball at this point. So, you know, we'll see here. It's a bit of a key stretch, obviously, with the Guardians kind of, you know, being in that wild card race now. And, you know, next week they go to New York after a couple more games on the homestand. So, you know, big stretch here.
So last night is rained out. What does that do? I'm assuming you were traveling on the road for this. So what does that do to your travel plans?
No, I'm not on the road right now on this one. So it doesn't mess me up too much. The only thing it does is pushes the rotation back. So Berríos will start tomorrow at home against Cleveland. And, I'll still be, here in, not so humid Toronto anymore. Thank goodness.
And I'm glad you said that, because Baltimore is a complete sweat from the moment you wake up. That is humid there, isn't it?
Yeah, I was talking to a few guys that, were on that trip, and, you can see them in the dugout. John Schneider was just pouring sweat. Oh. So, that's Baltimore in August for you.
Yeah, second only to Venice, but we'll leave that alone. Now, let's talk about Berríos. You mentioned him. I mean, his home and away record is, this is a contrast. Why do you think that happens?
Yeah, look, I think more statistical anomaly more than anything. It's funny when you look at those home splits and he's under four, at home, and you go back to April and, couldn't even get out of the first inning. So, those splits would look even a lot better if he didn't have that outing. So, look, I mean, some guys show this over their, the course of a season or two. Some guys show it over their career. I mean, it's talked about a lot in Colorado with, a lot of the pitchers there that have, better splits on the road for obvious reasons. And, yeah, I just think it's one of those anomalies. He's had some pretty good games on the road. But, Rogers Center is a tough place to pitch. So, he's kind of going against the numbers and the norms there, as well. So, we'll see. It's just been overall an inconsistent season for Jose Berríos, which is kind of out of character for him. So whether it's home, road, whatever, you just kind of want to see him get in a groove and not, throw up one of those clunkers, five or six earned runs that he kind of has a tendency to do this season, every four, five, six starts.
Yeah, I find the Jays to be an interesting example of this, and I think a lot of people do this with their favorite team. When things are working well, I think that you could really project this thing forward to great expectations and a pretty good finish. But when they stumble like they have been, you sort of are almost too hard on them. Where are you on the starting pitching? Like, what is your attitude towards that group that they have?
Yeah, look, it's recency bias at its finest. And, that's the thing about a long 162-game baseball season is, you kind of just have to take a lot of things with a grain of salt and just say, hey, tomorrow's a new day, and even next week's a new week when you're in kind of an extended skid. And, that's tough for fans because they kind of live and die with it on a nightly basis. And, yeah, look, when this team's not going well, their flaws are exposed. And, when they're rolling, you talk about one of the best offenses in baseball, and you talk about their top three starters. And look, I think it's a fair question at this point, especially after kind of you don't go out and do anything at the deadline other than get Mitch White, and, other teams like the Yankees are doing, making moves that have a lot more impact, like a Frankie Montas. But, and then you see Ross Stripling go on the IL, and you wonder if the Blue Jays have enough starting pitching, to get through the rest of the season. And, I think it's a fair question. So to answer your question of, where I sit on it, I think, look, you got two of the top pitchers in the American League, in all of baseball. I think, Alek Manoah and Kevin Gausman going out there every 5 days covers up a lot. You're going to have bullpen breaks, pretty consistently when those guys are on the mound. I think Berríos is a lot better than he's shown, and he's, worth that contract extension they gave him, if he can just iron out some of the consistency issues. And then, from there, there's a lot of questions. And that's the thing when you're in a very close wild card race, and, if they can't put some distance and get some breathing room, every 5 days you're going to have two question marks in that rotation. Stripling, it sounds like, is going to be on his way back pretty soon. But, right now you got two holes there that you don't know what you're getting every fifth day, and you're probably counting on the bullpen on those days a lot. So, it's not exactly ideal. So I think, if the team is sitting here in September and not in a, position that many people expect, I think it's fair to ask, if the front office did enough at the deadline, because, starting pitching is everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably where I was going to go next, and I was going to relate that to the talk about Soto a couple of weeks ago and what it would take, and I think the organization was pretty firm on wanting to not roll the dice but be competitive on a yearly basis. I guess I come out of that by saying to you, Scott, are they too conservative?
Well, look, I don't think so. I think, look, they, a year ago at this time, they made the Jose Berríos trade. They've been very aggressive in the offseason. I think sometimes, you know, people and fans and pundits and, you know, people that cover the team, you kind of have to remember sometimes things just don't align. I mean, you know, the Soto trade, the Padres had just about every type of chip that, you know, aligned with that trade. And, you know, when you look at some of the trades for starting pitching, you know, I don't know that the Jays system could have kind of, you know, come up with the same types of packages that, you know, the Mariners did for Castillo and the Yankees did for, you know, for Montas. So I think in those situations, you kind of have spent your prospect capital last year on Barrios. And, you know, you know, there's not a lot of starting pitching on the market either. It was definitely a seller's market for starters this year, and there just weren't a lot of guys, you know, moving. So, yeah, I think, you know, in certain instances, you'd like to see them be more aggressive, but I think they've also been aggressive, you know, for the most part, trying to build this team. And, you know, as, you know, kind of cliche as it sounds, I also think they've liked what they've got to a certain extent and, you know, didn't want to kind of push their chips all in, you know, with what remains in the system, which is, you know, at best the middle of the pack farm system. If you're a little lower on it, maybe, you know, 20, 25th, something like that. It's not a great farm system right now. So, you know, I think they just wanted to be a little bit more, you know, conscious of that, knowing that, you know, this winter there's also going to be trade chips needed to make a push for next year too.
Now I'm going to throw some numbers, and it'll sound like I'm picking on the Jays, but I'm just looking for, I guess, perspective. You know, okay in their division, and it's top heavy on games against the Red Sox or wins against the Red Sox, and not a great record against teams above 500. How concerning is that for you?
Well, look, I think when you look at any team across baseball, you know, the math says you go up and you go out and you beat up on the bad teams, you know, and pretty much every contender will have a very, very good record against, you know, the lower tier teams in baseball. And then how you do against the, you know, really good teams that are kind of in your class is going to depend on, you know, whether you're a wild card team or your team like the Dodgers or Yankees that kind of runs away with things. So, you know, I don't think it's an you know, a huge concern. I just think when you get into games, you know, against these top teams, you know, like the Rays, like the Yankees, you know, there's no margin for error for this Jays team. And, you know, we've seen them be, you know, very inconsistent in terms of, you know, some of the fundamentals it takes to win those tight, you know, September, October type games. And, you know, that's what we're going to learn about this team over the next, you know, 6 weeks to 2 months, depending on, you know, how far this goes, is, you know, how ready they are to win those types of ball games. Because, you know, any team can kind of run through June and July and you know, beat teams like the Royals and the Tigers and things like that. But, you know, every game that you play against the teams in your weight class are going to be tough games that you're going to need to pitch well. You're going to need to come up with key hits, and you're going to need all the fundamentals, you know, like defense and base running to be in place. And, you know, at times I think we've seen, you know, the Blue Jays as a kind of a young team that's kind of obviously not built perfectly, struggle in all those areas. So, you know, will they play some good baseball at the right time over these next 6 weeks? I guess we'll see.
I mean, it really comes down to they have to be healthy, don't they?
Well, they, absolutely, such a huge key. And, you know, that's where we'll see where things go with Springer. And, you know, that's obviously where they looked at the Whit Merrifield deal. And, you know, I think when you look at that deal and his ability to play center field and you know, kind of bring at least a little bit of a, you know, a contact bat-to-ball presence to the bottom of the lineup, I think that's a very smart trade. That's, you know, if they get into September, October, into those key games, I think that's one that probably people will look back on, you know, in a role-playing type role off the bench, wherever it is. You know, if this team's healthy, I think, you know, we'll say, oh, you know, that was probably a pretty key deal, you know, that the Blue Jays were able to make in those close-type games when you need some speed off the bench or something like that. And, look, in the event that George Springer can't make it back this season or, you know, comes back and kind of looks, you know, like he has at times, which is in quite a bit of pain with that elbow. You know, maybe he plays a bigger role and ends up helping them a little bit more. But look, I mean, the rotation and the bullpen has to stay healthy because there's really no margin for error there. And, you know, if they lose any key guys, and, you know, Tim Mesa was a big blow, but it sounds like he's at least going to make it back, you know, before the end of the season. And hopefully in, you know, later this month or first kind of week of September. But look, there's just not a lot of margin for error. So yeah, if they get a rash of injuries or, you know, I mean, hold your breath, Alek Manoah or Kevin Gausman, you know, deals with anything where they need some time off. Yeah, that's not going to look good.
Let's go out on this. From Seattle, Tampa, Baltimore, Minnesota / Cleveland in the entry, those teams that I rhymed off, who would you be worried about that could take a run at the Jays or cause the Jays some trouble?
Well, look, I had Seattle, making the playoffs at the beginning of the season, so I like them. And you know, we've kind of seen what they've looked like over the last little while. Obviously, you know, they got 61 wins, you know, now more than the Jays do. So, I mean, I think when you look at them, I think they're for real. And I like what they obviously did at the deadline, getting, you know, one of the best starters in baseball to add to Robbie Ray and Logan Gilbert. So I think they're a team that's built very, very similarly to the Jays in terms of, you know, having, a little bit of offense and some starting pitching. The difference there is their bullpen's elite. So, look, I think all these teams are very kind of evenly matched. And I think it kind of lends credence to this new playoff scenario because, you know, you clearly have, you know, the Yankees and Astros as the class of the American League. And then you have probably all the rest of the teams that you kind of just said, you know, the Blue Jays, the Rays, you know, the Guardians, the Twins, even the White Sox, you know, the Mariners. I think all these teams are kind of in that same kind of weight class. And I think you're going to have a pretty good run down the stretch here. And, you know, I've said it a few times. I think this is going down to the wire for, you know, these three playoff spots, these three wild cards. And, you know, it might just be like last season for Blue Jays fans, you know, watching, you know, the final weekend of the season and, you know, just kind of holding your breath.
Scotty, thanks very much. Enjoy your air quotes day off.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right, thank you. Scotty Mitchell, our Blue Jays reporter. They'll rescue you from your car lease. LeaseBusters, heroic, maybe, helpful, totally. People would love to take over your car lease. For lease relief, go to leasebusters.com. This is Gameplay on TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, and streaming on the iHeartRadio app. Oh, yeah, Gameplay, TSN 1050. Jim Taddy subbing for Matthew Cause. Gameplay on TSN 1050 brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. So, while we're talking about betting, Major League betting, we've got some games tonight. Obviously, the Jays are idle at home to Cleveland on the weekend. It rained out in Baltimore last night, so scheduled day off. What do you have for us, Chris?
I am looking towards the giant state of Texas. Tonight, we have the Rangers at the Astros. The Astros are favorite, -1.5, -134. I'm looking at the pitching matchup tonight. Framber Valdez has had a really good season for the Astros, and I'm looking for him to put up 6-plus Ks and for the Astros to win. You actually have to give a little bit of juice on that. That's -135. Valdez has cleared that strikeout total in 4 of his last 7 starts. And just, I think one of the greater themes of the Astros season is just how impressive their pitching has been, whether it's Verlander, Christian Javier, Framber Valdez. They really have one of, if not the deepest rotations in MLB, and I think they're going to be a real problem when the playoffs roll around.
Yeah, totally agree with that. The Verlander story is remarkable. We've talked about it before, but I mean, that's what the greats do, right? They find a way.
Yeah, and you talked about in the first block today about how Hall of Famers just kind of show up and do their thing. Is there anyone who embodies that more than Justin Verlander? The guy's just been a stud from the day he arrived.
I think we get lost because we're overwhelmed by the talent these guys have, but it's the inner drive, the mentality, and just the compete level that, you know, you can't put that into words, but they're all at the utmost, like the highest level in all categories, and they drive that talent. It's remarkable to watch.
It really is. So for our listeners, take a look at that Framber Valdez prop. Like I said, 287 ERA, 10-4 on the year. He is having an excellent season. You want to move on to the next game?
Sure, go ahead.
Let's go to the White Sox at the Royals. This is a tale of two different teams going in two different directions. When we talk about underappreciated starting pitchers, I think Dylan Cease is a guy who's got to be right at the top of the list. The guy's got an ERA under two. He's striking out, what is it? Just over 12 batters per nine innings. And this is a guy who has been a young prospect. He's had lots of pedigree. And I think he's going to have some success tonight against a Royals lineup that is pretty lacking when you look outside of Bobby Witt Jr., their superstar young player. For bettors, I would say take a look at Dylan Cease, 7-plus Ks, and the White Sox to win. That's going to be plus 120. Cease has cleared that number in four of his last six starts, and I do think that he will have some success tonight as well. What do you think about the White Sox? I feel like they kind of are getting lost in the shuffle. They do have a pretty talented team, but I kind of feel like they're in that same category as the Blue Jays almost, where they're a good team, they could make some noise, but they're not in that top tier with the Yankees and the Astros in the AL.
Well, look, I noticed that Scott Mitchell, when I was talking about Cleveland and Minnesota in the entry for either the division or the wild card race, he threw in the White Sox. So I noted that right away. Cleveland has the division lead by one over Minnesota, by 2.5 over the White Sox. So that's a three-team race. No question about that. You have to see how many games they play against each other at the end, which is usually at the very end. So, I mean, that's undecided. I just want to sidebar into Dylan Cease. I love that name for a pitcher. What do you think his nickname is? Stop?
He's the stopper. I mean, yeah, that's what you're supposed to call your ace, right? You're on a losing streak. He comes up the next time around. He's a stopper.
He's either the Ceaser or Stop. That's his nickname.
Caesar sounds very close to Caesar, and now you're making me hungry.
That's right. Oh, guy. Okay. Well, what's the next game you have? You got Baltimore against the Red Sox.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think if we looked at this game 3-4 months ago on paper, we would be looking at the Red Sox to be a pretty heavy favorite. But the Red Sox have not been good. Boston is just 9-21 over their last 30 games. I mentioned it earlier in the show. The Orioles are 22-8 over their last 30 games. And hey, it seems like they're arriving and they're on the scene. So I'm actually looking at the Orioles money line tonight. Plus 108. Not a huge line, but you're getting a little bit of value. The Red Sox are sending out Josh Winkowski. He's not had a great year. 5-5, ERA approaching 5. And the Orioles offense is really hot right now. So I'm definitely looking at the Orioles on the money line. What do you think about the Orioles' sudden turnaround? Like, did you see any of this coming? And do you think it's going to carry over into next year?
They've been a mess for so long. It tells me that they've got job one done and they're headed in the right direction. I'm not a big fan, especially in baseball, of jumping on a team that comes out of the All-Star break and does well. And I'm not going to rain on the Orioles parade. I think they've turned the corner. I just don't know how sustainable what they're doing is. And I just think that, sooner or later, the numbers catch up with them and they trail off. But they're back. They're on the plus side. I think that the bad years are over. And I think they're sort of making noise that, we're doing it now, but look out for us next year and the year after. They're making noise that way. I wouldn't get caught up in, I don't want to take away from them. They've done a nice job, but I just don't know how sustainable it is.
Speaking of taking away, their own general manager took away from their chances when they traded Trey Mancini and all-star closer Jorge Lopez. I just kind of want to hear your perspective on that. If you're an Orioles fan, are you annoyed that, they're knocking on the door of a wild card spot and here they are selling off when they've been unsuccessful for so long? You kind of think the fans would want something to latch onto. Do you think that that's kind of a questionable move by the Orioles, or do you think that it's a little bit savvy knowing that they're still probably not ready to contend as of yet?
Well, time gives you the answer to that, but I'm glad you asked that because I was watching a SportsCenter piece on Verlander, and it took me back to when he was with the Tigers, and they had those, I think they had three Cy Young winners in their starting rotation.
Scherzer, Fister, yep.
They had...
And Verlander, yeah.
Oh, Price there, too.
Oh,
yeah,
and Price,
Price
yeah.
there, too, right? Yeah, so, I mean, and now they fired the general manager who replaced the general manager that did all that stuff. Just look back on it. If somebody could do a piece on all those big guys that were moved out to start a rebuild and how the rebuild went. It almost makes sense that it's better to keep the guy. I know they make a lot of money, but if you've got a sure Hall of Famer, you know, why do you want to move him out? It makes the franchise look cheap. I'm not saying that that's, you know, that applies to the Orioles. You know, who knows why they did all that stuff. If they think they've turned the corner, maybe you'd like to keep them around. And I know everything's like sort of what salary motivated and trying to contain things. But seriously, you're spending a lot of money anyway. I'm not a big fan of those moves anymore. It just reminds me of the Expos. And I hate to hit a sour note with that, but they had to do that for years because they just didn't have the money. And that was just sad to watch. Coming up next, we'll talk about the World Junior Hockey Championships, the summer edition. Sean Simpson, my partner in crime on the broadcast, will be with us and you on Gameplay, TSN 1050, tsn1050.ca, and the iHeartRadio app.
This hour of Gameplay is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app.